We're on.
Hey, TGIF, Carmine.
Thank you. It's about time.
We're ready, just before Turkey Day.
Yeah.
So we are with Jean Sheldon today, and she is the Vice President of...
Microsoft Office Authoring Applications, which is a big way of saying if you're reading or writing or preparing documents for publishing, those are technologies that are done in my group. And we also work on, I have a team in India that's working on the Office Mobile applications.
Mm-hmm. So you run an engineering team?
Several engineering teams.
Engineering teams. So you're not on the marketing side.
No.
Actually, that was part of the conversation that we were having with Roz Hull yesterday, was that there are very few women VPs at Microsoft who are in charge of product groups versus marketing or business
or
HR.
That's true.
Yeah. So you've been at Microsoft for 19 years?
It was 19 years in October.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Nice. Wow. Some weeks it feels like, gosh, I just started here.
And what did you do before you joined Microsoft?
Before I joined Microsoft, I was actually in this business before. I worked for a company called Software Publishing, and they made a set of products that were fairly well known in the 1980s. Harvard Graphics, Harvard Publisher, Harvard Professional Publisher, Harvard Project Manager, the PFS series of products, which were for a time OEM'd with IBM, and also First Choice, which was the sort of low-end application suite that validated the market for works back in the day.
So, going back even further into your background, were you, I'm going to take a wild guess here, were you really good at math in school? Did you?
Yeah, math and science came fairly easy for me, but I never, you know, that wasn't the complete thing. Like, I never wanted to settle down and just do, just do math and science. So I ended up studying physical science and history in college, and trying to, you know, sort of wanted to be a Renaissance woman and put it all together. I tried to keep, you know, one foot firmly in each of the sort of very different cultures in school.
Mm-hmm. And then you wound up in high tech.
Yes. Well, that was sort of roundabout, but I grew up in an IBM household. Mm-hmm. And and when I was in high school, I was in an Explorer post where we learned how to punch cards and write "Hello World." That mostly served to make me realize that I wasn't all that interested in computing at a time when you had to sort of serve up your deck of cards to the administrator and then wait a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The personal computer, something in your hand or on your desk, really changed changed things for me.
Hmm. So, in almost 20 years at Microsoft, have you been in a bunch of different groups?
Actually, well, yes and no. I started in a group in Microsoft that was called the Office Business Unit. But there wasn't a product called Office at that time. And the thing that we focused on was email. Mm-hmm. We had a Mac email server at that time, and word processing, and a set of extensions for Windows that we called Pen Windows. So we were doing a lot of interesting things, handwriting recognition, some early sort of tablet, PC kind of innovations. Email was a big initiative going on. And during the times that I was in that group, we also acquired a PC software company. And at the same time, we were working on our own, you know, obviously, email system of exchange. So, I guess probably word processing has been the continuing thread, and later on I became the test manager for the word group, and I also for a time managed user assistance group for Word, which was kind of fun too. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it sort of got away a little bit from the core business that I was interested in, but it really sort of gave me a different focus on the business. Mm-hmm. So, yes, sort of. I've been at office in office the whole time.
Mm-hmm. So, what is a day in the life like for you now that you're the running this group? How many people are in your?
It's about 150, mm-hmm. 160 mm-hmm. in the group.
What are your, for our viewers at home, what are some of your core responsibilities?
Going to meetings and signing things.
I mean, that's a great question. What do VPs do?
Well, that's one of the things that I like about the job. It allows you, I really have the opportunity to dig into things which are my passion and my enthusiasm. And my view is that the group is best served when I have the opportunity to explore things in ways that align the things I'm super interested in with what's going on with the team. So a typical day, I do a fair amount of reading, both, you know, about what's happening in the industry, what's happening in the business, but also reading bug lists, what's happening in the product, reading, project reports and so forth, finding out what the publisher, developers, what kind of progress they made working late last night on fixing bugs, reading reports from customers, reading about escalations from, our support people, just to get a feel for it. I'll do a variety of one-on-one meetings, both with people that report directly to me, the group, various group managers in the organization, and then skip level with other people in the organization. I try to do a fair amount of the door is open or I'm walking around and sort of talking with people. And very often, because I manage a team in India and their clock is, exactly opposite from ours, I'll start early in the day or late in the evening from home with a conference call. Mm-hmm.
So, without being specific, at a generic level, what kind of decisions are you responsible for in your leadership position? What kinds of things are you asked to kind of help make the call on? Is it about product direction?
It's around product direction. It's around the organization of the teams where we invest the resources that really fits with product direction. Overall product direction and what products we want to invest in,
and the
vision. What kind of resources, the vision. Mm-hmm. We collaborate in the office. There's a number of VPs working in different parts of the organization, VPs and general managers, and we work together with and also with various people mm-hmm. across the team to pull together a vision and then help us, help the organization track against that vision so it isn't sort of eroded over time but becomes a really compelling aspect of the product.
Can you talk about some of your challenges in your job? What's hard about your job?
Oh, absolutely nothing.
What?
No, it's sometimes hard. I think the hardest part of product engineering is around the edges of product teams. None of us, sort of create this whole cloth piece of software that works all by itself, which means that we need to collaborate with other teams. We need to do it well in order that those seams between the products aren't don't scream out to the users, and we need to reflect that in how we work together as people. And I don't think people necessarily went to study computer science so that they could figure out how to work super well with people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so helping people do it, and then, you know, reminding myself that there are other objectives in the organization besides the ones that we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And you know, and sort of doing that dance with our partners. Mm-hmm. And making it work well. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes hard to look at, you know, as we're hell-bent on producing the next great version of the product, it's important to spend a lot of time looking at the customer experience with the existing product. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes painful to see aspects of their experience that haven't been, you know, quite perfect, and take that feedback, to thank them for it, and then figure out the right way to use that feedback without, you know, sort of bouncing reactively from one thing to the next while still keeping that cohesive vision moving forward.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, as a woman VP at Microsoft, you are in an elite club. There aren't very many of you, but it's growing. Mm-hmm. So, what does that feel like? I mean, that's something you should be very proud of.
One of the things that I was just delighted to discover when I became a VP at Microsoft a few years ago was in the first executive meeting that I went to, I walked into the room feeling a little uneasy, not knowing quite what to expect, and looked around at the, you know, sort of sea of male faces. And two women that I hadn't met before from the other side of the room made a beeline over to me and said, "You must be Jean. You know, I am so excited to meet you." And even before that, every single one of the members of that elite club had sent me a piece of email congratulating me. The other email that I got was from people that I work with, people I had worked with in the past, people, you know, who knew me. But this was such a, you know, welcome. Mm-hmm. I liked that they didn't take this for granted.
Yeah.
That there was a very, you know, the real awareness about it, and a real warmth that was unexpected and really pretty nice. And that's something that I've had the opportunity since then to pay it forward a few times, and that's good too.
So, why do you think, and it's not about Microsoft, but it's about computer science and engineering and development, there are a dearth of women and females in the industry and in computer science school and classes. What is your take on that? Is it because when they're very young girls, you know, elementary school kind of thing, that there's more of a stigma around it's kind of a geek thing, if nerdy, if not cool, or where does the breakdown begin?
Well, you know, the not cool factor, I think, can, you know, I have a son, and, you know, I know he thinks about what's cool and not cool as well. So I don't think that differentially affects women. I honestly, I wish I knew. Mm-hmm. I wish I understood it better. I think that there is some stereotypes about the work, and particularly the sort of the isolation that's involved in writing software sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's mostly a lack of understanding of the nature of the work. It's hard. I don't think women's or men's brains were particularly evolved to write computer software, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're always sort of fighting to challenge ourselves to think more deeply about the problems. But I find it invigorating, and I really, really hope that over time we're able to find another generation of women that, that are similarly charged up by the by those kinds of challenges.
So in your career, have there been any times where you felt because you were a woman that you were had any that you were held back at all or had overcome certain stereotypes or anything?
No.
Or behave differently? Like in a meeting, the way you communicated or something?
Oh, I think so. You know, I have a pretty soft voice. And I certainly think that there's been times where I've had to sort of artificially, you know, raise my voice to make a point or be heard. I've been really fortunate that I've had the opportunity to work for a number of men that have really gone out of their way to make sure that that different voices within their group were heard and recognized. And so I haven't felt that so much. I think the real challenge that I've seen with women in Microsoft was something that I felt acutely in my first few years at Microsoft, which is what it's like to have small children at home and sort of play dueling schedules with your husband if your child is sick or if your child care arrangement ends at 6 o'clock, being able to find ways to balance that. It's a challenge for parents of both genders, but I see it being felt more acutely for by women, and I think if your career feels a little bit like it's in the doldrums at that point, it becomes very easy to say this isn't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need to consider, all phases of people's life and challenges. I really sort of dislike the term work-life balance,
mm-hmm.
because I live a lot at work. it's life balance.
Yeah,
it's how do I keep hold by having all of these different aspects of me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's particularly challenging when you have small children, and that's something that I certainly felt acutely.
Mm-hmm. And Microsoft has been really good about trying to accommodate, work life or flexible work schedules and
yes.
working from home. And I feel like this company
most of the challenges were. Personal to me,
right.
rather than put upon me by the company. I think
it's that
side of it has gone very, very well for me.
Mm-hmm. Especially recently, in the last few years, I think Microsoft has really
very much so.
Really,
well, for me, always. Jeff Rakes was brought me into the company, and in our first conversation, I said, "Look, I have a 4-year-old." son, and I am just not interested in spending my nights down in the in the building. I want to be there for his bedtime. I want to help him get up in the morning. And he said, "My goodness, I should hope so." and I always had that kind of support. So even in the very beginning, but certainly now as well.
Even as so it's interesting because now you're a VP.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd wonder about, number one, a lot of the VPs seem to be pretty freaked out all the time in the sense that you're responsible for so much, right?
Uh-huh.
Think about the money that you're responsible for with the products that you own.
So it's, I wonder if you have a little more pressure than, say, just your random rank and file developer, as opposed to, you know, what I mean by that is, like, how much flexibility do executives really have? And
Chris Peters once talked with me about a product issue, a Word product issue, and, you know, I said, I've really been worrying about that, and that's why I'm doing these things and these things, and he said, good, that's why I can sleep at night, because you're not. and there's a little aspect to that for VPs. If you know who's worrying about the problem and how they're thinking about it, it helps you feel some confidence. Well, you know, look, we're not doing this by ourselves.
Understood.
And so it's, you know, it's a matter of creating and building that kind of trust in organizations that makes it easy to sleep at night with a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because I wonder about it sometimes, like the responsibility a VP has must be just immense. You know, for those of us in the rank and file, we worry about getting our little projects done, right? Or solving an algorithm or whatever, or fixing a nasty bug. But you're ultimately accountable for, you know, at the end of the day, Steve looks over numbers and is like, what's going on with Word? You're the name that's associated with that, which is must be pretty intense. Because a lot of us don't think about what the responsibility of VP
Well, has and thinking about what's out. Going on with Word 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Is you know, one of those opportunities to keep yourself awake at night. But the way I do it is, you know, you talked about, you know, dealing with a nasty bug or, you know, figuring that out. Well, I drill down on those things and when I understand what's happening there, and then sort of combine that with a sense of how it's all balancing together. It's, you know, it's each of those individual sets of decision making and so forth that informs and makes it less of a pressure cooker.
Cool.
If you know, you can't feel like you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah. Sure.
So what was your career plan 20 years ago? I mean, did you always want to be, you know, an executive? Were you highly ambitious in that way, or?
No, that's interesting. Before I got into computer software, I thought that was the direction that I wanted to, you know, I've had maybe three major career shifts over my life in, you know, in different industries. And I actually, out of college, started in specialty retail, and I was managing a chain of specialty retail stores. And I thought managing was pretty interesting, and it seemed to, I don't know, not come easily for me, but it seemed to be something I could do. So I imagined myself becoming an executive at that point. But when I started in software, I found the activity of building and testing and releasing software so engaging, so intellectually engaging, so exciting, so compelling. There wasn't anything else I wanted to do, and it was sort of, after a while, I kind of go, yeah, okay, I guess I can manage teams that do that, because that's something I've done before. Mm-hmm. But it's about the software. Mm-hmm. It's not about the role in there. And there hasn't been a job that I've had in software that hasn't been just completely engaging for me.
Mm-hmm. And you said at the start of our interview that even though you've been here a while, you still feel like sometimes you're brand new, meaning you're still learning, right?
Right.
You're still
right.
growing. You're still being challenged.
New technologies, new ways of looking at things,
Yeah. You're not tapped out yet.
Oh, no.
Even though you're a VP. But that's one of the questions. Where do you go from here? What's the career plan for a VP?
You know,
good question.
You know, sometimes people ask me about how I mapped out my career and I'm probably not a good source for that kind of guidance. Because I just sort of followed my heart or my brain, but not in a way that was about my career. Mm-hmm. It was about always putting myself into a place where I could make a difference. Whether it's making a difference with people's experiences with software, making a difference with, you know, to the business, to the people in the organization, always finding those kinds of positions, and then just doing the work to the best that I knew how, and that's all I ever wanted to do at Microsoft. That's all I still want to do.
Mm-hmm. Actually, though, we've done quite a few executive mm-hmm. interviews, and a lot of people have said that. They didn't have, like, the five-year plan of going mm-hmm. from, you know, director to GM to whatever. It was about following what they really loved. And that it's nonlinear, right, Charles? Mm-hmm. We've discovered that a lot. And people have very diverse backgrounds. It's not just going and getting a comp sci major and then going straight into the industry. Mm-hmm. It's, they have all sorts of backgrounds, which is really interesting because when, you know, our folks watch these videos, they think, oh, well, that's me. That reflects me. I don't have to do just that.
Oh, I hope
so. A to B kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a home for me in places mm-hmm. like Microsoft mm-hmm. that appreciate all the variety in my mm-hmm. background and mm-hmm. history.
But if you want to be an executive, right, I doubt there's any VPs at Microsoft. Actually, there might have been one, who no longer works here, who was like who came the path of IC, right? So in other words, you start off as an individual contributor writing code mm-hmm. or testing code, mm-hmm. and I think it's great, and you're a path from test to VP mm-hmm. for all the testers out there. That's great. Mm-hmm. I think Soma was also a tester in the early part
yes.
of his career.
Yes, yes.
But what if you don't want to be a manager?
There's less of us than there are women.
Yes.
That's an excellent point. Maybe we should start a new show and figure out, well, why aren't there more testers than that? Because that's a really super important role. But I guess back to my random question would be, when you think about the path from rank and file to exec, it mm-hmm. has to include some level of management. I mean, in other words,
sure.
a VP with no management experience, does that make sense?
Management, and then what translates into leadership, because those are different things.
They're different things, yes.
Right, exactly.
So, what's your question?
So my question, let me try to quickly figure out what my question was. But I mean, on the other hand, the core responsibility of a VP is the business, right? You own the business of Word and, as you were saying, document software that's part
the
of Office.
The business and the technology.
And the technology, right? Mm-hmm. You're when they think of that, who do you blame for things or who do you shower with stuff? It's you. That's the name. So I guess what I'm asking is, can you become a VP without wanting to be a manager? That's really my question. I mean, you can still be a leader and not want to manage people.
There's different kinds of wanting to be a manager. I sometimes have ICs who say, I want to be a manager because I can't seem to get these people to do what I want. But if I had the title, I would be able to do that. And, you know, I sort of explain to them that managing a large group, particularly through multiple levels, is a little bit like driving a big truck full of people mm-hmm. on a mountain road mm-hmm. and the steering wheel goes out. And so basically you have to say, okay, everybody lean to the left, mm-hmm. lean to the right. And they basically have to want to. Mm. And that's actually one of the things I enjoy about this is the, you know, the pure common interest brings you together to do these things together and not, nobody has to work here. These are all talented you know, amazing people that could find opportunities in other places as well. They have to want to do it. They have to, you know, want to come together in those ways. And if I can find ways to feed that impulse, to remove barriers. It's a very sort of unglamorous, you know, manager is the janitor who unlocks the door, you know, or sweeps up the stuff that gets in your way of getting the work done. You know, sort of bringing people together. Oh, you should talk to so-and-so because they've done some really amazing things. If that's for some people, that idea of management is very, makes them feel very uneasy, mm-hmm. uncomfortable with it. But that ultimately is what makes it work. So that's why I caution people who say, oh, you know, I need to be a manager so I can get people to do things. And I said, no, you need to discover how to get people to do things, mm-hmm. want to do things, mm-hmm. and then you are a manager. Mm-hmm. It's not something you become with the title.
Yeah, you can influence people without being their boss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's some of the funnest positions that I've had have been, I've had a great time working through the Y2K problem, mm-hmm. in 1998, 99, across teams. And I belonged to a virtual team, and I had a virtual team within Microsoft Office. And I think only one of those 20 people was, you know, directly in my organization, and we did some great things. Not that Y2K wouldn't have been even if we hadn't done those things, but those kinds of experiences are what people need to have, and that's what leading is about. It's like managing and manhandling have the same, same root.
Exactly.
M word.
Grab by the collar. Yeah.
Ooh.
Exactly.
And that's
not leadership.
No. No.
Exactly.
Pulling rank. Sure, that happens.
So.
Yeah. I mean, that happened when I got the corner office, I guess.
The double windows. So, I just have a couple of questions left, and then Charles will have a bunch.
No.
I'm kidding. I want to know what you love about working at Microsoft, but you can't say one of two things. Either one of these following two things. Mm-hmm. That you love the people, or that we're, changing the world, touching everyone on everyone's desk. So outside of that.
Oh, darn.
Because, yes, we all work with smart, talented people, and yes, we like to think that we're changing the world, and we are. Uh-huh. What else about this company is just really cool?
Well, okay. You have to edit out that little gap while I'm thinking.
No, not at all.
I mean, I normally do say working with a lot of...
Everyone does.
It's
that's why I rule
smart
this out.
Talented people. But it's also there's a degree of sort of intellectual humility, like... we haven't solved all these problems, and we need to, and those guys out there are doing an amazing job on it. So we're very, the self-critical mm-hmm. element of it, of the company culture, I think is really valuable. Mm-hmm. The sort of sense that we can make mistakes mm-hmm. and learn from them. We're not a company that sort of hides our mistakes and forgets about them, but thinks hard about why did this happen? How can we make this not happen again? There's this sort of tacit permission to mm-hmm. sometimes make mistakes, but never to make the same ones again.
That's right.
And that's been really valuable. And I think over time, Bill's vision was and still is an important part of what the company is. The ability to think past how a product is doing in the how it did in the last quarter to mm-hmm. what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to sort of double down on products that maybe weren't initially, you know, right out of the gate huge successes. And I think my experience in earlier years had less had a much closer horizon in how we looked at product success.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to be really successful, we sometimes need more than one shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's worked well for us mm-hmm. to kind of keep coming back.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Cool.
That's inspirational. But that's I wonder if when you all go off to your annual executive retreat, if you drink the same Kool-Aid, because you all say the same thing, which is great,
really?
Though. Honestly. Literally.
No, we absolutely don't say the same thing at the retreat. It truly is. If you hear that from other people, it's because it truly is a piece of the culture, and not because we kind of talk about, you know, what's great about Microsoft is. In fact, there's very little time at those kind of retreats talking about what's great about Microsoft.
It's talking about what we have to fix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. But I totally agree. We are self-critical, and we can make mistakes and not get fired. As long as you don't keep making them or make them again, but you get to learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that about this company.
Absolutely.
So is your name Elizabeth?
It's Elizabeth Jean Shelton.
I'm noticing some of your plaques and awards.
Oh, I know.
But you prefer Jean?
Yes. Well, that actually all happened in, like, kindergarten. My mother always thought that I should be Beth, which Beth was not my favorite in Little Women, so she's a little on the wimpy side. But anyway, and everybody started calling me Little Liz, which, you know, she hated. So
Jean it is.
Yes.
And it stuck.
Yeah.
Do people underestimate you because of your quiet voice and your? Maybe because you're not in people's
sometimes
faces?
For a little while.
Yeah, and then... watch out.
But we Roz talked about that last time, remember? About the communication differences. So mm-hmm. one of the things we're trying to do with this series that we created
mm-hmm.
is to figure out is there a difference between the way men and women approach solving problems that are in the software context, right? We have no firm answer there, right? Technically, there's no difference, I mean, obviously. But the way that the genders perhaps think about the larger picture, it seems that it could be, but not necessarily the case, that women have a tendency to be more broad in their thinking and thinking about multiple contexts simultaneously, whereas men tend to be more focus-oriented. Now, that could be wrong, but we have to think about something that's going on here to find out why that there's this sort of difference in this.
I've sometimes seen those patterns. There's this kind of monomania among, you know, sometimes with men mm-hmm. in this industry. And there's something, you know, if you want to think about it in terms of you know, biological patterns, our history of evolution. If you're sort of keeping the fire going and keeping the children from being eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, and you know, picking berries and, you know, and so forth, you have to have your mind on a whole lot of things at once. There's this mm-hmm. inherent messiness that's different than going out and hunting down a mastodon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so maybe our brains were shaped somewhat differently in order to accommodate that sort of messiness.
Cool.
And it's a good balance. Sometimes the problem that you're dealing with is hunting down a mastodon. Fortunately, I think that our brains are adaptive enough that we're able to, you know, fill both of those spaces.
It takes all types.
Both genders are. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's good. So I'm glad Lynn Hill is running the parallel computing platform team.
There you go.
Very important.
Because there's this inherent messiness.
Well, because, you know, women are thinking are much more concurrent, and that's a good thing. That's great. I just would like to address that sort of sticky issue sometimes. It's important to do.
Yes. So I'm good, Carmine. Are you?
I am. I think we figured out, you know, what a VP actually does.
What one VP actually does.
I mean, is there a commonality amongst you guys? I mean, do you get around? Yeah, is there like a VPs at Microsoft alias where you guys can sort of go back and forth and
say what you do today?
What are you doing? Well, I'm just hanging out. What are you doing? No, I'm kidding. It's a tremendous amount of responsibility. So, and the path there, as she was saying earlier, is nonlinear. There's no there's no formula to become a VP.
I think that's right.
So, excellent.
Can you go to the lunchroom without being mobbed by your team? Do people leave you alone, or are people like?
You know, that's one of the things that
are you a celebrity?
Surprised me, and well, I was the celebrity judge for our Halloween decorating contest. That's what they called it, a celebrity job. The title brings a little bit more intimidation factor than I expected. So sometimes I'll send an email response to a large alias because I just happen to know the answer to the, you know, and it never happened before, but now it just kind of goes silent. Like,
you have spoken. So I guess that's interesting. Then you really have to be thoughtful about what you say and how you say it in the context and the audience because of the weight that the title carries.
Right, and you also have to, I think, sort of break that down a little bit among those people that you work most closely with, and, you know, to make sure that
if there's a sort of
closing off of information, of casual conversation, of ideas that sort of stop at some level below you, then you have to find ways to get that, to get dissenting opinions, you know, healthy, vigorous arguments. I really enjoy hearing a lot back, whether it's disagreements or, you know, and I find I have to work a little bit harder for that with the title.
Sure. Corporate America, corporate syndrome. You want to upset the wrong people. I mean, let's be honest. You piss off your VP.
Right.
You piss off your VP, come review.
Or
they might only know of that person that comes along your list of things you're reviewing. Like, that's that jerk that,
Well, that's why we can't be random in the, you know, reaching down into our organizations and telling people what decisions that they should make.
Absolutely.
Because we only have these little slivers of understanding.
Cool.
So you have to create an organization where the deepest understanding lies is where the decisions happen, and then you just sort of manage the whole vision around that.
Excellent.
Wow.
Cool.
Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Great products, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
We use them every day.
Yep.
Me too.
Thank you.